This episode of All Sides was previously recorded.
Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. Election Day is less than a month away, and while the airwaves have been dominated by the U.S. Senate race, Ohioans have three important statewide races on their ballot. Three seats for the Ohio Supreme Court. These six-year terms will determine which party, Republicans or Democrats, have a majority on the court. It could swing for the Democrats, go 4-3. Or we could end up with a Republican supermajority, 6-1. We're going to hear from all six candidates running for the court later this hour. But first, we're going to talk about the court itself and the cases it will likely face in the coming years. Here to help me with that is USA Today Network Ohio Bureau reporter Laura Bischoff. Welcome back to All Sides.
Hey, Anna. Thanks for having me.
We haven't seen a lot of ads, but these three races are going to shape Ohio's future. What are some of the issues we expect the court to rule on in the coming years?
Well, they have their kind of their bread and butter, meat and potatoes kind of issues like utility policies, how much you might pay in your utility bills, taxes, insurance policies, interpretation of contract law, home rule, public records. But then they also have some hot button political issues that tend to wind their way up to the Ohio Supreme Court. In recent years, that's been questions over how redistricting should be done in Ohio and how the Constitution applies for legislative and congressional districts. And you'll remember that there were a lot of 4-3 decisions on that. Maureen O'Connor left the court, and now Sharon Kennedy is the Chief Justice. And I think with the issue one from last year, abortion, reproductive rights passing, I think a lot of cases are going to end up at the Ohio Supreme Court, which will be asked to interpret how that new constitutional amendment should be applied.
There's already cases on the six-week ban, which is the heartbeat bill. There's a case on the 24-hour waiting period for an abortion. There's a number of challenges already working their way through the process. School vouchers is another case that we are likely to see before the Supreme Court. The expectation is that the initial trial here in Franklin County will start in early 2025. But ultimately, what is constitutional when it comes to the public paying for private schools? That's going to be a Supreme Court issue.
Yeah, and that'll be a big one. There's always, you know, there's been a constant political fight in Ohio over school choice issues, and school vouchers has sort of extended that.
DeRolf being the most famous of those cases.
Yes, DeRolf 1-2, whatever.
It's also looking like the state Supreme Court will hear a case on whether people should be allowed to carry concealed weapons while drinking in bars. The court has agreed to take up a case of a guy who allegedly shot somebody in the neck in a bar fight in a men's bathroom. So we have a long-standing law, right, Laura, that says you cannot carry a gun in a bar while you're drinking.
Right. That was part, you know, the carrying a concealed weapons law passed under the Bob Taft administration, so a good 20 years ago. And over the years, that was chiseled away in terms of expanding the areas in which people were allowed to carry. And one place they weren't allowed to carry was in bars while drinking. You could still carry, if you were a permit holder, you could still carry in a bar if you weren't consuming
alcohol.
So
if you're the designated driver.
Yeah, you're the designated gun holder. But, of course, you know, we did away with the permit program and the background checks. And so that's sort of a new question about, does this prohibition still apply?
They could overturn it. They could uphold it. The appeals court said that Ohio's law is unconstitutional after that ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. So who knows? But our state court will be hearing a case potentially on whether you should be allowed to carry your weapon in a bar while drinking. They're also in the middle of this case about Columbus busing kids to private and charter schools. We have a law that requires public schools to bus kids to private schools unless it's like an undue burden, and there's certain criteria for that. And the city of Columbus and Attorney General Dave Yost are in a big fight over the interpretation of this.
Yeah, that's another case we're going to hear.
And then there are the cases that they've decided that have made headlines. There's this case of the boneless chicken wing. The decision became fodder for late night comedians. Can you quickly run us through the facts of this case? Because it was Joe Dieters who wrote this opinion, and he's running.
Correct. And this might be his most famous opinion so far as a state Supreme Court justice. So there was a guy down in the Cincinnati area. He ordered boneless chicken wings at one of his favorite places. He was eating with a knife and fork. He was not gobbling down his food.
I don't know who eats boneless chicken wings with a knife and fork.
I guess this guy, Michael Berkheimer.
That's okay.
So anyway, so he's eating, and there was a bone that was kind of embedded in one of the wings, and it was kind of folded, and it sprung open in his esophagus and ripped open his esophagus. He tried to clear his throat. The next morning, he was very ill. He went to the ER. He ended up with permanent damage. I think he was in a coma for a while. It was really bad. And so he sued.
Yeah, it was not like just choking it down. He was seriously injured.
He was very injured. And so he sued to try to get his case before a jury. And he was not allowed to take it to the jury. That was the crux of the question. I think people kind of see it also as truth in advertising. These are boneless wings. I'm buying boneless wings. Why do they have bones? And whether or not you could expect that when you order something that says fresh squeezed orange juice, that it's not 6 months old, or that it's, you know, peanut free, that it actually
That's
doesn't
important.
Have nuts in it. Right. And so this was a 4-3 decision. It was authored by Justice Joe Dieters, and it has kind of gone viral, I think, because, you know, everybody eats boneless wings every now and then, and you kind of wonder, when you order it, you know, do you get what you're paying for?
Yeah, he called boneless wings a cooking style and not a guarantee that bones would not be present in the dish. Let's talk a little bit about the makeup of the court. So the size is set by the Constitution. There are 6 regular justices and a single chief justice, making 7 justices of the Ohio Supreme Court. Right now, there's a 4-3 Republican majority, and 3 sitting justices are running to retain their seats, or in Joe Dieter's case, a new seat. But we'll get to that in just a moment. So we could end up with a 4-3 Democratic court or a 6-1 Republican court.
It could go in all kinds of configurations. What's interesting is that the Republicans have held a majority of the 7 seats on the Ohio Supreme Court since 1986. And also, we've added partisan labels to...
Yeah, that's pretty new.
...to candidate. Yeah, this is the second election cycle in which partisan labels are applied to candidates for justice of the Supreme Court and also appellate court justices. Lower court justices are still nonpartisan races. And so there's some thinking that that gives the voter more information. There's also some thinking that it politicizes the judiciary, which should be more, you know, above politics. But whatever, that's where we are now, and we'll see how that turns out.
And what are the qualifications? Because you don't have to have be a judge previously.
Well, that's correct. You know, Joe Dieters is the first one I think since the mid-90s to be appointed to the court and had no prior time on the bench. Of course, he was a former...
Longtime prosecutor.
Longtime prosecutor in Hamilton County and also former state treasurer.
Yeah, that's one of the things that his opponent, Melody Stewart, is bringing up, that he had no prior judicial experience. But now he's been on the court for a year and a half-ish?
Yeah.
So he's got a little bit of judicial experience. And I think that's up to voters to decide whether they like that or they don't like it. They're also getting endorsements, which I find sort of wild for a judicial race, but I guess it makes sense. So the Democrats are endorsed by Planned Parenthood, while the Republicans have been backed by Ohio Right to Life. It's fascinating.
Well, what's interesting is that judges are not permitted to, they're very restricted in what they're allowed to say on the campaign trail, because there's a lot of cases and issues that might come before them. And so I think these you know, they all say they'll uphold their oath to abide by the Constitution and the law and not read their personal opinions into decisions. But I think that these 2 endorsements, Planned Parenthood for Don Lee Stewart and Forbes and Ohio Right to Life for Dieter, Shanahan, and Hawkins, is some easy shorthand for the voters. You know, if you think that... Particularly as the...
If you have an opinion on abortion, this gives you a clue how to vote.
This gives you a clue about how those organizations think they're going to view these cases.
Yeah, we're going to hear from the justices in just a couple of minutes. But I will say that they have all been pretty clear that they didn't seek out these endorsements. They were just bestowed upon them.
Right. And Ohio Right to Life came out a little bit later in this cycle with its endorsement than they usually do.
Let's set up the races for folks. So... Let's start with Joe Dieters. He is a current sitting justice running against Melody Stewart, another current sitting justice. How does that work?
Okay, so Joe Dieters was appointed to backfill the position left when Sharon Kennedy became Chief Justice. So there's 2 years remaining on that term. He could have run for retention, but then he would have had to run again 2 years from now. So what's less fun than running statewide once? Running statewide twice. He decided to run against his colleague, Justice Melody Stewart, and go for a full 6-year term. This is, I think, caused some intra-court...
there's some bad feelings.
Maybe it's a strain on collegiality, although both say that everything's fine.
So the next pair, I've heard you dub as the Battle of the Irish Judges.
Yeah, so this is incumbent Cleveland area Democrat Michael Donnelly versus challenger, a Cincinnati area Republican, Megan Shanahan. Donnelly is very vocal and supports this criminal sentencing database project. He consistently votes with other Democrats on the court. Shanahan is a Hamilton County Common Pleas Court judge, a former prosecutor, used to work with Joe Dieters. She does not support the criminal sentencing database. So that's an interesting matchup. And then we have the newcomers.
Yeah, for the open, well, the seat being vacated by Joe Dieters.
Correct. And that's Cleveland area Democrat Lisa Forbes. She's an 8th District Court of Appeals, has a long history in corporate law. And she's going up against Columbus Republican Dan Hawkins, who's on the Franklin County Common Pleas Court and formerly a municipal court judge who handled a lot of environmental cases.
We're going to hear from all 6 of the justices in the coming hour, but I do think it's important. Laura has done some great reporting on these races. We're going to have our own voter guide up. It's important to take time and really learn about who these people are because they're going to shape the course of your life in the coming years. Is that a fair pitch, Laura, for learning about the judicial candidates?
Absolutely. And I think it is difficult to find good information on judicial candidates, again, because they're kind of hemmed in on what they're allowed to say. And so I really encourage people to, listen to Anna's show and dig into the profiles that are posted at dispatch.com about the Supreme Court justice candidates.
That was Laura Bischoff, a reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Coming up, we're going to hear from the 3 Democrats running for Ohio's Supreme Court. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about the race for the Ohio Supreme Court this hour, and we're about to hear from the 3 Democrats running for seats on the court. We're going to hear from the Republicans later on in the hour. So without further ado, let me introduce Associate Justice Michael Donnelly. Justice Michael Donnelly has been a prosecutor, a criminal defense lawyer, and a trial court judge for 14 years. He's finishing his 6th year as an associate judge on the Ohio Supreme Court, and he's asking voters in November to return him for another 6-year term. Justice Donnelly, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
You're listed as a Democrat on the ballot, but in your bio, you note that you're an independent judge. What do you mean by that?
If you look at any of the literature that I am distributing in my campaign, you won't see the word Democrat or Republican. It stresses my independence as a jurist. And I've always felt that way. Many years ago when Chief Justice O'Connor, then Chief Justice, was trying to advance the judiciary and make judicial elections nonpartisan, I joined her in that because as judges, I don't believe we should be running under party label. Nothing we do has anything to do with partisan politics. My sole allegiance is to follow the law.
Why should voters choose you?
Well, I ran from the trial bench where I sat for 14 years, as you mentioned, because I wanted to have a louder voice, speak with more influence on necessary change that I believe needs to take place in our criminal justice system and in our civil justice system. I believe that every citizen deserves maximum transparency, maximum fairness, and efficiency from our courts. Our courts are there for two reasons, as I see it, to resolve disputes, whether those are criminal disputes or civil disputes, and to protect the rights that are enshrined in our Constitution.
I want to talk about some of your positions. You've pushed modernizing the court. You talk about preposterous disparities in sentencing, needless delays at the trial court level. What kind of reforms are you hoping come to the Ohio court system?
Under our laws, our sentencing laws, judges, trial court judges, are supposed to sentence similarly situated defendants with similar sentences, regardless of such irrelevant factors like the color of their skin or their socioeconomic place in society. But unlike the federal system, there is no data collected that would allow judges to keep themselves consistent with themselves and consistent with other judges in the system. And therefore, any practitioner that is listening to your show right now will tell you the truth about Ohio sentencing, and that is you can go into one judge's courtroom, conduct a sentencing hearing with the same set of facts, same lawyers, and have an outcome of probation. And you can take those same lawyers, same facts, walk 15 feet across the hall, do it again in front of another judge, and there's a possibility you could wind up with 20, 30, 40 years in prison for the same crime.
Republicans have criticized you for what they say is, quote, legislating from the bench. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think I responded most forcefully in the most recent case that has become probably the most infamous case to come out of the Ohio Supreme Court, and that is the boneless chicken case. And that's where the majority took pains to redefine the term boneless as something that should be packed with bones, or that you should expect bones. And that case dealt with your right to a trial by jury. If reasonable people could differ as to whether they should find a bone in a boneless chicken wing, then that matter should be decided by a jury, not by a judge. But they thought otherwise. That would probably be Exhibit A at Federalist Society meetings from this point forward as judges legislating from the bench.
The next Ohio Supreme Court is going to handle several large cases. We may be hearing cases on redistricting. We're certainly going to be hearing cases about different abortion laws that exist in the state of Ohio. Now, I'm not going to ask you where you come down on these kinds of issues necessarily, but more about your judicial philosophy. How do you approach these cases?
My allegiance is to follow the law. My personal agreement or disagreement doesn't come into play. That's what America has always been built on. We're always going to have policy differences between our fellow citizens, but when those policies become laws, we've all agreed that those laws are to be followed. If you don't like the laws, you work to change them. I'm not a fan of the death penalty, for instance. And when I have death penalty cases, do I always vote against it as a policymaker who opposes the death penalty? No, because it's the law right now.
Democrats running for the court here in Ohio have been endorsed by Planned Parenthood, while Republicans have been backed by Ohio Right to Life. Do you ever worry that these kinds of endorsements might contribute to a distrust in the judicial system?
Yeah, it's a concern because I've never sought out endorsements like that in the past, pre-Dobbs decision. But that shows you the chaos that has been inflicted on this country by what the U.S. Supreme Court did, first time in its history, taking away a right by overturning major precedent and saying it's a matter for the states. But people, even people who disagreed with that decision, said, okay, if it's with the states, they took steps to enshrine those rights back into the Ohio Constitution. And what did they see from our supermajority that controls the legislature when that happened? They took every step to try to thwart that process by first raising the bar of the percentage on which it would take to change the Ohio Constitution. I wrote the dissent when they held that illegal August election, and the voters had their say. And now if you want judges who follow the law and will protect those rights, you probably have good reason to have suspicion about people who don't say, I will protect your rights. If they just say, I will apply the law as written, well, then you can think about the power to assign meaning to words, and you can think about the boneless chicken case, and that might give you some cause for concern.
That was Justice Michael Donnelly running to be reelected to the Ohio Supreme Court. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Next up, we have Justice Melody Stewart. She served 12 years on Ohio's Court of Appeals before being the first Black woman ever elected to the Supreme Court in 2018. She's being challenged by fellow Justice Joe Dieters, a Republican, who decided to run for her seat instead of wanting to retain his own. Welcome to All Sides, Justice Stewart.
Thank you, Anna, for having me.
On your website, you say that the only reason to run for political office is to serve the public, not serve partisan political agendas. When you're running with a party designation by your name, how do you keep partisan politics out of it?
It's unfortunate. The politicization of our courts, I think, is going to continue a spiral into an arena where I think it's just not good for our judiciary. When I ran for the court in 2018, there was very little to no discussions about politics and qualifications. And my opponent in 2018 was extremely well qualified, and she had been a well-respected appellate court judge for many years. And so now what party affiliation on the ballot has done is it's lessened the credentials for some to apply. It's kind of diluted, if you will, the quality of the applicant pool, because the sole motivation is to get people of a particular party elected. It allows the parties or politics and partisan politics to control aspects of government that should really only be about public service.
Justice Stewart, you were part of the bipartisan majority that repeatedly struck down our state house maps as gerrymandered. Your opponents describe that as legislating from the bench. Can you explain how you and the other justices reached those conclusions in those cases?
Sure. And I had the privilege of authoring that first decision that struck down the maps as unconstitutional. And let me be clear. I understand that we as justices on the court, or all the members of the judiciary, we all don't have to think alike. Quite frankly, I don't think the public wants a group of jurists who all think alike. And someone feels that your interpretation or the way you're reading something is not accurate, then you're challenged. And we have an obligation, I think, to go back and reevaluate those positions. Those positions were not movable at all back when we were looking at those redistricting cases. It was clear to the majority as day that even listening to some of the comments of the redistricting commission, the governor at the time, the secretary of state, they even recognized the absurdity of how the maps were drawn in their comments. The governor said politicians shouldn't be doing this. The secretary of state said this is, voting for this is the second asinine thing I've done today. They all recognize that. So it's so disingenuous then to then in public say, oh, there was no gerrymandering and these were fair maps. And when they all knew that they were gerrymandered maps and not fair maps. I never thought in my wildest dreams that the highest court in our state would issue an order, make a decision on a case that then was just completely ignored. And some would say wasn't completely ignored, as they did redraw the map several times. Well, they tweaked the map several times, but it became quite clear that under no circumstances was the majority members on the redistricting commission going to comply with the Supreme Court order. Now, you can agree to disagree, but when an order is an order, can you imagine a criminal defendant being convicted of a crime and sentenced to prison and then telling the judge, you all got it wrong, judge, jury, you got it wrong. So I'm just going to go home and resume my life and do what I want to do. And when you work it out, then come back and get me and we'll talk about it.
You've been quoted as saying, on no planet is my opponent a better addition to the court. Why do you say that?
Well, because he just isn't. By any objective criteria. Joe Dieters, prior to being appointed by his friend, the governor, had never served a single day in his life as a jurist, not as a judge appointed or elected, not as a magistrate. And Joe Dieters has been elected to several different positions. And so it's suspect, one, the governor's appointment. Joe Dieters was going to face a tough race for re-election for Hamilton County prosecutor. And the Dieters and DeWine families are notorious for giving each other's appointments and jobs. And, they're friends, and there's nothing wrong with being friends. But it's apparent that the governor made this appointment either for personal reasons or for political reasons, but certainly not any for good government. And so we have someone who's been on the court for 18 months, going against someone who's been an appellate jurist for 18 years. I'm the most experienced appellate jurist currently serving on our Ohio Supreme Court. I have practiced law. I have taught law. I have written about the law. I do the work of the court, and it's more than just putting on a robe and sitting on the bench. It is doing the committee assignments that we're assigned to be on. Joe Dieters and I were assigned to be on the revamping of the writing manual. He didn't attend a single meeting. I'm sure he wants the title and the prestige and the salary, but it's apparent that he really doesn't want to do the job. And I don't know, maybe he was told he doesn't have to do the job, just maybe show up. I'm the most educated, having not only my JD, which we all have, but having a PhD in social science to help look at how we make decisions and ask the right questions and think about unintended consequences. I am the only person of color on the court. Now, maybe that doesn't matter to Joe Dieters and to the governor, but it should matter. Our Supreme Court should be representative of the people of the state. I'm probably the only person on the court who grew up in a single mother home with a parent who only had an eighth grade education.
That was Supreme Court Justice Melody Stewart. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Judge Lisa Forbes serves on the 8th District Court of Appeals. A Democrat from Cleveland, she is a first-generation college graduate. Forbes faces Franklin County Common Pleas Judge Dan Hawkins, a Republican, on November 5th. Welcome to All Sides, Judge Forbes.
Thank you for having me.
You've called the Supreme Court the, quote, last line of defense for our rights and liberties, described it as a firewall to protect our democracy. How will electing you protect our rights?
Electing me will help to protect the rights of all Ohioans on the court, because that's my North Star. I understand the importance of exercising judicial restraint when reviewing matters. That is to say that any individual's personal opinions are not what's important when you're a judge. What is important is the oath that we take to apply and uphold the laws of the state of Ohio and the United States and the Constitution of the state of Ohio and the United States. And so in me, you will find a jurist who is committed to, dedicated to the understanding that the Constitution should be enforced and upheld by judges, and that, you know, we have a social compact. And in our state, as in the country, the other branches of government are supposed to listen to the law as handed out by the Supreme Court. And I will be consistent in enforcing the rights of all Ohioans.
One of the criticisms that we're hearing from the Republicans is this: they're creating this idea that Democratic justices are going to legislate from the bench. But you've called the recent 4-3 decision by the Republican majority over boneless chicken wings an example of legislating from the bench. Why is the chicken wing a good example of legislating from the bench?
The reason I believe that the boneless chicken wing case is legislating from the bench is because that case does two things that I think are distressing. The first is it declares that boneless is a cooking style. And the second is it declares that Ohioans have no reasonable expectation that something identified as boneless will in fact not have bones in it. That is effectively redefining the term boneless. In fact, dictionary.com proclaimed boneless to be the word of the week the next week because it was like the most looked up word, I believe. In fact, they clarified that the dictionary defines boneless as meaning without bones. And that type of sort of result-oriented decision-making, rather than the other way around, letting the law and facts and application of the law to the facts result in a decision, that really feels like that was a case that the decision was set and then it was just backfilled to try to put some reasonings. I call that legislating from the bench because you can't just change the meaning of words. I have never done that. I will never do that.
The next court is likely to hear cases dealing with abortion and access to reproductive rights in light of the amendment passed by voters in November of 2023. I'm not going to ask you where you come down on abortion, but I am going to ask, how do you approach cases like this? What is your judicial philosophy when it comes to cases that are really going to have an impact on the way people live their lives here in Ohio?
Well, you know, that Reproductive Freedom Amendment that was passed last November is, you know, it's a great example of one of the unique rights we have as Ohioans. And that is that initiative power, that a citizen-led initiative can lead to a constitutional amendment. You know, that's not something that is afforded by the United States Constitution, but our Ohio Constitution does give that added protection so that if representative government is not reflecting the will of the majority of people, the people of the state have a way to make their voices heard. And that is what happened here with the Reproductive Freedom Amendment. 57% of Ohioans voted in favor of a Reproductive Freedom Amendment that's now part of the Constitution. So how I would conduct my analysis is to recognize those essential democratic principles and start with the Constitution. What are the words in the Constitution and what is the challenge? There are some 30 odd statutes, as I understand it, that are anticipated to be making their way through the courts in the years to come. And so I think that the first place to start is the words of the Constitution. The second place to look is the words of the statute. And the next place is to look at what is the particular challenge that is being raised. I would use the analytic tools that I, in my 32 years of being a lawyer, have really honed. And that means to, well, first the plain words, and if it's possible to answer the question by simply applying the plain words of an unambiguous provision, then that's where you stop your analysis. If there is some ambiguity, then you go on to look for intent and look at things such as definitions.
That was Judge Lisa Forbes. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. I appreciate it. This is an important service to the voters of Ohio.
Coming up, we're going to hear from the three Republicans running for Ohio's Supreme Court. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. This hour, we're bringing you all six candidates running for Ohio's Supreme Court. Earlier, we heard from the three Democrats. Now, we're going to hear from the Republicans running in these races. First up is Judge Megan Shanahan from the Hamilton County Court of Common Pleas. A former criminal prosecutor, Judge Shanahan was first elected to the municipal court in 2011. Voters later sent her to the Court of Common Pleas, and she's challenging incumbent Supreme Court Justice Michael Donnelly. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you so much, Anna. It's great to be here.
I want to start with some of the cases that you have presided over. One in particular was former University of Cincinnati police officer Raymond Tensing, who was tried for the murder of an unarmed Black motorist. There was intense media, community attention. How do you manage a case like that?
It was an interesting undertaking. The attorneys in that case, the parties in that case, the family members in that case, and the jurors in that case were spectacular. On all accounts, everybody really stepped up and did the very best to represent their clients in the state of Ohio and to be good civil servants. It was an interesting situation to deal with the media because there was national media in my courtroom every day. We made accommodations to try to make sure that everybody had an opportunity, but invariably, oftentimes there were many delays, and I said it through the trial, that were occasioned by the media interjecting themselves in the trial. I was sued by the local media because they wanted copies of the juror questionnaires unredacted. Ultimately, it settled because the jurors' personal information was redacted, and I allowed the jurors to themselves personally redact their questionnaires. But it was things like that that really caused that trial to take a turn that it shouldn't have and take a significant amount more time to try the case while we're trying to manage these outside influences that have absolutely nothing to do with the actual trial themselves, we did everything we could to provide the public with full access to that trial, insofar as even providing separate courtrooms where we were live streaming the case so that anybody from the public was welcome to come and watch.
It sounds like quite the learning experience.
It was. And, you know, my training as a prosecutor for 11 years, my prior experience on the bench definitely prepared me to manage that situation. And so I did.
You've also spoken about how you kept your docket moving when you were hearing some complex medical malpractice cases involving Christ Hospital. So how do you balance keeping things moving while dealing with, I mean, medical records, malpractice? Healthcare is just complicated, heavy stuff to slog through.
It truly is. That was a 7-week jury trial. It went 7 weeks to the day. So imagine what we were asking the juries, the sacrifices they were making. But on top of that, all the content that they had to learn and absorb, and the lawyers and the experts to teach it. It was a very heavy, weighty business. I have incredible staff. And also the lawyers, I'm very blessed with the lawyers in our county. They understand when I'm on the bench and I'm in a trial like that, they come in, they get their business done with me in the morning so that we can get back to the trial. You have to do it. You can't just ignore these cases or hope they go away. Those litigants had a right to get their day in court, and I assured that they did.
Your website notes that you're a member of the Federalist Society, which has pushed conservative judicial candidates to the U.S. Supreme Court, to appellate courts. What should people take away from who you will be as a justice on the Supreme Court from your participation in that society?
Regardless of my participation in the society, what people should know about me as a fact is that I'm an originalist. I follow the law and the Constitution as written. And yes, I am a Federalist Society member, but I am an originalist judge, and that is just my policy.
When it comes to cases that involve hot button issues like abortion, can voters in Ohio trust that you'll leave your personal feelings at the door?
Absolutely, without a doubt. The benefit that you get with a judge like me, who's an originalist, it doesn't matter what my personal opinions are. They are completely irrelevant. I take an oath to uphold the laws and apply the Constitution as it is written, and I will do exactly that.
You supported the constitutional amendment saying judges could consider public safety when setting bail. How did you take into account how to set bail as a judge, and where do you come down on how it should be applied?
It is a case-by-case basis. There is no question about it. You need a judge to listen to the facts that are being read. You need a judge to contemplate the situation as it's presented through the paperwork. And to make this assumption that we could just assign a random number or no number, it's dangerous. I think that having that human element of a judge in their wisdom and knowledge and background is essential to keeping our community safe, and judges should be the ones setting bail.
The last question is, I joke, it's always the hardest, which is, why should Ohioans vote for you?
I understand the role of law, and I know what my role as a judge is in our system. Judges call the balls and strikes. That is it. You need judges who are going to provide that continuity and stability for our community, for Ohioans, for businesses, for everybody. And you will get exactly that when I am your next Ohio Supreme Court Justice.
That was Hamilton County Court Judge Megan Shanahan. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Next up, we're talking with Supreme Court Justice Joe Dieters. He spent the bulk of his career as Hamilton County's longest-serving prosecutor. In that role, he established the state's first drug court and a diversion program for first-time nonviolent offenders. Governor DeWine appointed him to the court in December of 2022. Justice Dieters, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's quite unusual for a sitting justice to run against a colleague. Why did you make that choice?
Well, it's not that unusual. If you remember last year, Sharon Kennedy and Jennifer Bruner ran against each other. They were on the same court for the Chief Justice role. When the governor appointed me, I made it very clear to the folks that were vetting me that if I was selected, it was my intention to run for a 6-year term and not for a 2-year term where I'd be turning around and running again almost immediately. And the only issue then became, who was it that I was going to run against? And it was either Melody or Mike. And discussed it with Alex Triantafila, who was the Republican chairman of the state party. And actually, I told Alex, it's your call. And he said, let's do Melody. So that's why I'm here.
We talked to Justice Stewart earlier in the hour, and she was critical of the fact that you had never served as a judge before taking your place on the court. How did your experience as a prosecutor shape you for the highest court in Ohio?
Well, I'm a trial lawyer. I mean, I've spent my lifetime in the courtroom. I've prosecuted 5 serial killers in my career.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, from tiny little Hamilton County. But I bet I would venture to say that if you took everybody in the Supreme Court, and not just as a judge, but as a trial attorney, I think I have more trial experience as a trial lawyer than all the judges combined on that court right now. I handled vast amounts of civil issues as county prosecutor. You represent every elected official. I had 125 assistant prosecutors who I managed. I would stack my legal career up against anybody's.
I want to talk a little bit about bail, because before you joined the court, the justices had a 4-3 decision that excessive bail was unconstitutional. Where do you come down on bail and when it's used and how it should be used, particularly as somebody who was a prosecutor for so many years?
Funny you should ask that question, because that's the reason I'm a judge today. 3 years ago, I had a murder case out of my county down in Cincinnati. It was a bad murder case. The perpetrator fled to Las Vegas, was trying to leave the country, had multiple identifications, false identifications. And the judge in that case, as judges have done in Ohio for 120 years or so, considered this person dangerous and set a bond at $500,000. The defense thought it was too high. This may surprise you. We thought it was too low. So it worked its way up the court system and it got to the Ohio Supreme Court. In a 4-3 decision, the Supreme Court overturned 100-plus years of Ohio jurisprudence and decided that when setting a cash bail, the safety of the community shall not be considered. And it floored me. I could not believe it. We obviously use bail to protect people in danger situations all the time. Domestic violence cases, people come back and they get back out of jail and they hurt the victim again, sometimes fatally. And the only way you can get rid of a bad, and I would term idiotic, Supreme Court decision like that is to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. So I put together a team of people, and we got it on the ballot, raised a bunch of money, gotten on a bus, and shouted from the rooftops how wrong this decision was and that this was a vital tool to protecting victims of crime. Anyway, it passed with like 76% of the vote. The vast overwhelming majority of Ohioans thought that that should be the case. You should be able to consider safety when you set a bail amount. After that happened, I realized how critical one vote on the Ohio Supreme Court could be. And I told the governor if there was ever a vacancy that he could make an appointment to, I would be interested in going on the court.
We're going to vote on another constitutional amendment this November, known as Issue 1. You were on a Cleveland-based politics shock talk show recently and said that you're not a fan of this Issue 1. Why?
No. What I said was, I was pointing out motivation. I was not pointing out the value of the issue at all. People can do whatever they want. I don't care. It's just been an overriding theme that when you want to change the rules, that's what's happening. They're changing the rules on how Ohio does its redistricting, and that's a fact. There's been discussions about packing the Supreme Court of the United States. There's been discussions about getting rid of the Electoral College. It's just more methods to make it more your ability for your particular party to win a race. I didn't opine on the merits of it at all.
So you don't have a public opinion on issue 1?
No.
That was Supreme Court Justice Joe Dieters thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Last but certainly not least is Common Pleas Court Judge Dan Hawkins. Before Dan joined the Court of Common Pleas, he was appointed and then later elected to the Environmental Division of the Franklin County Municipal Court. He also spent 13 years as a Franklin County prosecutor, directing the Special Victims Unit there for a decade. Welcome to All Sides, Judge Hawkins.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How has your experience at the county judicial level prepared you to serve on the Ohio Supreme Court?
Having that trial court experience, sort of that ground level experience to know how our system works, it gives you so much more of a better insight, I think, about the state of our justice system than just maybe just spending a career reading transcripts and what have you. As a trial court judge, I have to face legal decisions every single day. I have to know all areas of the law, from serious criminal cases to all kinds of civil disputes. Every case that the Ohio Supreme Court handles are cases that I see every day at the common pleas level, with the exception of the Public Utility Commission appeals that go straight to the Supreme Court.
Your website describes you as a strong conservative for Ohio Supreme Court. What does that mean to you? How do you define strong conservative?
I think that means just somebody who, I was raised in a blue-collar, working-class family who appreciates the importance of work, of faith, of love of country. Those are the values that I grew up with, and those are the values that we instill in our own children. So I guess that's how I would define it.
If you and the other Republican candidates win your seats, the GOP majority on the court will grow from 4-3 to 6-1. Do you ever have any concern, whether it be all Republicans or all Democrats, that something would be lost in terms of diversity of opinion on the court?
First of all, it's up to the voters who ultimately they want to serve on our court or any elected office. But reality is, I think if you look at a lot of the decisions that come from the Ohio Supreme Court, they don't necessarily break down on the Republican side versus the Democrat side. But a lot of the opinions are either unanimous opinions from the court, or you'll see a mixture of opinions between some of the Republican and Democrat justices on one side versus the other. Some of the more hotly charged political type of issues or issues that you see in the news might break down in that Republican versus Democrat form. But even some of the decisions where the Republicans are on the same side of an issue, they don't necessarily get there the same way. You see concurring opinions where maybe the justices disagree on the outcome, but disagree on how they got there. So I think there still is a diversity of thought in the court that doesn't necessarily break down on quote unquote Republican versus quote unquote Democrat lines.
You say you want to uphold Ohio law as written and not legislate from the bench. So I do want to ask, what does legislating from the bench mean to you?
It means having a predetermined outcome, deciding how you want a case to end up, or maybe you have a certain policy preference as a judge, and you use the court case as a vehicle to implement that decision. I have personal preferences on a wide array of issues, but I don't get to implement those as a judge. If I want a certain issue to be changed in the law, then I should run for the state house, or I can petition to amend the Constitution, do all those things that citizens or legislators could do. But as a judge, I'm supposed to just take the law as it's written to me in front of me, apply the facts of a case to the law, and nothing more, nothing less. Just call those balls and strikes. I think that's what judges are supposed to do. And sometimes that means issuing a decision that I don't maybe personally like, but that's part of a job, is making tough decisions as a judge.
So you're saying voters can trust you to set your feelings aside?
Yes, yes. I mean, I've seen that through my career here in Franklin County as a judge. You know, I'm a Republican, but I've won 3 elections here in Franklin County, which is a pretty blue Democrat-run county. But I've always had support from the business community and the labor community, from the more prosecutor-oriented law enforcement folks, and also the defense bar and public defenders, because they know me as my reputation as being a judge who listens to all sides, who's fair and impartial on every case.
Last question is always the hardest. Why should Ohioans vote for you this November?
I usually make a crack about, right now there's no justice on the Ohio Supreme Court that graduated from Ohio State.
So I'd be that's a good pitch.
Yeah, the right now there are no Ohio State Law School grads on the Ohio Supreme Court, which I think should be illegal, but we haven't passed that amendment yet. No, in all seriousness, I've spent my career in public service. I forego any kind of more lucrative job options because I come from a family of public servants. My father was a Vietnam War vet. I come from a family of teachers. Public service is near and dear to my heart. And so for the past 24 years, whether it be defending women and children who are victims of human trafficking and abuse, to my time in the environmental court, battling those nuisance properties and drug houses in our poorest communities, to now in the common pleas court, ensuring we have justice for all every single day. My vast experience, I think, would lend itself very well to the Ohio Supreme Court. I think I'd be able to provide that experience for years to come.
That was Common Pleas Court Judge Dan Hawkins. Thank you for your time today.
No, thank you so much.
Go Buckeyes.
That's right, go Bucks.
And that'll do it for this hour of All Sides. Thank you all for listening right here on 89.7 NPR News.